And now for something completely different.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Let's do it.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. With you till 3 on this Tuesday with plenty to get to over the next few hours. Coming up, the Chiefs struggle again on Monday Night Football. The NFL seems to be wide open this year. And what are the biggest issues for Kansas City? Plus, we prepare for our first college football playoff ranking tonight. What are the biggest questions to be answered by the committee this evening? And how should the top 10 look? We'll get to that with our Tuesday top 10. Are Clemson struggles this year actually good for their future? Plus, an interesting trend early on in the NBA season. The latest on Zion Williamson, who can't get on the floor. And we'll catch up with Rex Walters, who played in the NBA, coached in the NBA, coached Zion Williamson last year. He'll join us in an hour. Can the Braves finish off the World Series tonight? I'll let you know where I've been right, where I've been wrong, and a whole lot more between now and 3 o'clock. You can join the conversation throughout the afternoon, 843-721-9500, to give us a call. You can always text the show, 843-608-1734. Get to us on Twitter, at Morrow Middays, on Facebook, at ESPN Charleston, via email, studio@kirkmanbroadcasting.com, or online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Just click on our show page from the homepage, and there you can leave a comment for the show. You can find the latest versions of the show podcasted right there, or you can even take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go by simply streaming us online at charlestonsportsradio.com. We're with you till 3 on this Tuesday. Joe's on the steel wheels. Joe, what's going on? How are you?
Mighty fine. About you?
Yeah, not too bad. Beautiful day. And we've been having some fall weather lately. Today, almost 80 degrees. Beautiful. Nothing better than, sitting inside and talking some sports for the next few hours. Happy to be here. Let me start with last night, Monday Night Football. The Chiefs just sneaked past the Giants. And the Chiefs, to me, now that they get back to 500, we know the offense has been struggling. They haven't been blowing out teams. They have just 23 points over the last 2 weeks. I watched that game last night. The Chiefs reminded me of a townie. Do you know any townies in your life? Right, the kid who never can get away from that experience of high school or college. There was somebody like that in my life at both high school and college. By the time I was a senior in high school, this person had graduated college already, and they were still hanging around town. Then I went to college, similar idea. There was a kid who had graduated from the college I went to years prior, still hung around. He used to hang out with people that I knew. I was never that friendly with him because I thought it was a little odd, but he would come to the dorm rooms. He was like a late 20s hanging out with the 20-year-olds in the dorms of the college. He'd go to the bars, even, hit on some of the girls. And to the point where these two guys, both of them, ended up getting jobs at the school. They could not move on from what they seemed or what they felt was the best time of their lives, apparently. And this would be a good conversation for some sort of therapist. Why are people like this? Why do we have these townies? They're in every town. I'm sure you knew one growing up. They graduated high school 5 years ago, and yet they're still hanging around with the high school kids. They come to all the high school sports. It's like, move on. Go hang out with kids your own age. Go off to college. Go get a job. Do something else. You're not in high school anymore. And oddly enough, these two kids both ended up getting jobs. The townie that I knew when I went to high school ended up working for the high school. And the kid that still hung around the college he graduated from years prior ended up getting a job at the college. They just couldn't get away. But sometimes in life, you have to reinvent yourself. People struggle with that all the time, especially those who were the big man on campus. especially athletes who are the big man on campus, even if it's just high school. You are the star high school athlete. We all know these people. You go back to the reunion, they're still wearing like the Letterman jacket. They're still talking about the great touchdown they scored. I think that's great. That was 18 years ago. What are you doing now? Like, you're a father. Who cares about the game you played 20 years ago? But it's hard to move on when you are the big star or when you're Mr. Popular. Sometimes people have a hard time growing up, moving on, recreating themselves, finding a new path in their lives. And that's kind of like the Kansas City Chiefs. For 3 years, they were the most dominant offense, had the highlight plays. Patrick Mahomes was the MVP, the young star quarterback. They were doing these crazy things, trick plays. He was throwing it all over the place. It was working. This year, it's not working. The NFL has caught up to them. And for a couple of different reasons, and I've laid out these reasons before. Number one, maybe the biggest reason, is that the Chiefs had to remake the entire offensive line. They showed the numbers last night. The Chiefs are the least blitzed team, and yet Patrick Mahomes is the sixth most pressured quarterback. So anytime you can get pressure on a quarterback without blitzing, you're going to have success. What led to Tom Brady losing his Super Bowls, especially the Giants? The fact that they could get pressure on him without blitzing with that defensive line. Every quarterback will look normal when they're under pressure consistently. We saw that with Mahomes in the Super Bowl. So when you can get pressure on the quarterback without blitzing, if you're only able to rush four, still pressure the quarterback, and play seven in coverage, and that makes it very hard on the quarterback. Which leads me to point number two, this idea that the NFL has figured out the Chiefs. I mean, maybe there's something to it, but it's a combination between being able to get pressure with your defensive line and then, therefore, being able to play the too high safety look. Patrick Mahomes has seen that defense more than any other quarterback in the league by about 50 snaps. It's a wide margin that defenses play that style against Mahomes more than anybody. And when he goes up against two high safeties, Mahomes has more interceptions than touchdowns. The numbers are not good because, again, it's more difficult when you can pressure the quarterback with just four, drop seven in coverage, have the two safeties there, force them to just go underneath, dink and dunk, and that's not really Kansas City style. I think it's the way the defense plays them. I think it's the way the Chiefs' defense has played for most of the season that forces Kansas City to feel like they have to push some things offensively. And I also think it's the impatience of Patrick Mahomes or even Andy Reid that feel like they have to push some things. Try to push it downfield, take some chances. We saw last night that interception down by the goal line. If you were watching the Manning cast, Peyton had a great reaction. I mean, what are you thinking? What are you doing, Patrick Mahomes? For this kid that we crowned as one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, MVP, he makes a lot of mistakes like that, a lot of bad decisions. But if it works for 3 years and everyone's talking about how great you are and you're Superman, you're Clark Kent, you start to feel that way. You can start to feel a little invincible. And especially if those things work out, you're going to keep taking those chances. It's like what I've said about the Houston Astros with the cheating scandal and how they got away with it. If you were in that position, and I guess the most easy parallel to draw was maybe back when you were in school and you cheated on a test, you got caught, nothing happened, right? And you thought, well, okay, well, I didn't get punished. I still got the A on the test. They didn't seem to care. Let me do it again. And we all are guilty of doing something until it no longer works or doing something until you get in trouble for doing it, right? You'll sneak into the gym without paying, sneak in through the back door. And keep doing it until they finally catch you. And it's like, okay, well, then I guess I can't do that anymore. Knowing that you were doing something wrong the whole time, but you were getting away with it. So it was fine. Patrick Mahomes was able to get away, and the Chiefs' offense, with a lot of this stuff for 3 years. Last night, they had one explosive play. One play of over 20 yards, and it was on a screen pass. They did not have one completion downfield. They ran before that interception, where Mahomes threw it into like three defenders. They ran one of those... they lined up. It was like a wildcat. Lined up Mahomes as a receiver, sent him in motion, handed it to him. They're running flea flickers. Like, what are you doing? And this stuff's not working. The teams in the league have adapted. Your team is different. Your defense isn't very good. Your offensive line isn't very good. You had to pay some guys, which cost you the ability to afford some others, leaving some holes on that roster. You have to reinvent yourself. You have to adjust. Actors do it. Musicians do it. Celebrities do it all the time. You have to reinvent yourself. We look at an actor and like, he's nothing more than a comedian. And comedians' careers only last so long. There's not a ton of older comedians. Right? Comedians usually have a shelf life. So they become more serious actors. Adam Sandler did it a little bit. Vince Vaughn has really done it lately. Right? Ben Stiller's done some serious movies. You can only be a comedian and tell the same jokes in movies and play the same role so long. You gotta have to kind of reinvent yourself. Right? Musicians do it all the time. You have to keep up with the trends. Madonna did it. Maroon 5, Adam Levine. Now you have to keep up with the way the music changes over the years. And the Chiefs are still doing the same things that were working for them years ago when it was working. The only problem is now things are a little different. After 3 years, the same tricks don't work anymore. The defenses are a little bit different. Your offensive line isn't as good. You're taking too many chances and not having enough success and making too many mistakes. They lead the league in turnovers. I mean, by a wide margin. They're like minus 12 in the turnover margin. Of course you're going to be 500 when that happens. You can't turn the football over three times each week and expect to win or at least win by a wide margin. And now they're back at 500. Barely got past the Giants at home last night as a double-digit favorite. Right, Mahomes only completed. I mean, it was 29 of 48. Completion percentage in the 50s. Had just the one touchdown. Had one interception that stood and a couple of others. Right, he could have very easily had three or four interceptions last night with some of the chances. When you tell somebody how great they are and how impressive the arm is, they're going to take more chances. That's the thing with gunslingers. Brett Favre, even Matt Stafford to a certain degree, you believe you have the arm strength and the arm that's good enough to make every throw, and so you try to do it, and you try to throw it literally through defenders. It doesn't always work that way. But I was watching the Chiefs last night. They remind me kind of those townies from my childhood growing up. And at a certain point, it's time to switch things up, to reinvent yourself. No longer are you the cool kid in high school. No longer are you the big jock that everybody loved in high school. Right now you're a grown man. You have to go get a job. Hang out with people your own age. You're not in college anymore. And I know college was a lot of fun. Sorry, you only got your 4 years. You graduated. Now it's time to join the real world. Stop hanging around college kids when you graduated a decade ago. You got to go find yourself. Reinvent yourself. Things change. You have to adapt. Keep up. Kids struggle with that sometimes. Seems like the Kansas City Chiefs are as well. Which takes me to this. We're getting ready for the college football playoff rankings tonight. And we'll talk about that coming up in just a little bit. And in college football, there's one clear favorite right now, Georgia. And then we believe Alabama is just about as good and the second best team in college football. But I'm very curious to see how the rankings will play out tonight. That's why I'm going to give you my rankings in just a little bit. After Georgia, it's kind of anyone's guess. I mean, we know the teams. We may not know the order, how much the committee respects certain programs. But we know who the number one team is. In the NFL, I don't know if we even know who the number one team is, but there's a lot of parity. When you look at the NFL, ESPN's FPI still makes the Bills the heavy favorite. The Bills have a 29% chance of winning the Super Bowl. The Buccaneers are second at 15%. So the Bills have almost two times as good of odds as anybody else, which I strongly disagree with. I don't know how you can make the Bills a favorite right now by two times as much. Buccaneers are second. Rams are third at 12%. The Cardinals have an 11% chance of winning the Super Bowl. This according to ESPN's FPI. Cowboys at 8%, Titans at 6%, so on and so forth. But when you look at the NFL this year, would you really be surprised if one of about, 12 teams at least made it to the Super Bowl this year? In the AFC, the Bills seem to be the heavy favorite everywhere you look. So the Bills are one team. In the AFC North, the Ravens. Would we be surprised if the Ravens won the AFC? I know the Bengals are coming off a bad loss to the Jets, but just a week ago, people were talking about how they are one of the best teams in the AFC. I'd be a little surprised because you have a young quarterback, first-time head coach who's been there now 3 years, but a young guy who's never won anything of importance. I'd be a little surprised, but the Bengals were 5-2 prior to that loss against the Jets. Their numbers are pretty good. Top five defense, dynamic offense, big-time receiver. You know, they've won a couple of good games this year. People like them. I mean, the Steelers, 4-3, but I'd be surprised, I guess, Ben Roethlisberger. But you have a Hall of Fame quarterback, a Hall of Fame head coach. A lot of people picked the Cleveland Browns to make it to the Super Bowl this year. The Tennessee Titans, even without Derrick Henry, are 6-2. They have the best record in the AFC. Would you be surprised if they made a run to the Super Bowl this year? At this point, without Derrick Henry, maybe. In the AFC West, the Raiders may not get a ton of respect, but they do have the second best record in the AFC. They're 5-2. The Chargers, even though they're only 4-3 with Justin Herbert and all that talent, they're, at least on paper, one of the better teams still of the AFC. And even the Chiefs at 4-4. Would you really be surprised if they turn this thing on and make it to the Super Bowl with Patrick Mahomes? I mean, there's a reason why, even though they were under 500 last night, they were still favored by 11. Because Vegas still believes, right, they're underachieving, that they're a much better team than what they've shown. I think we all feel that way. And in the NFC, the Cowboys at 6-1, you have to take them seriously as a Super Bowl contender. In the NFC North, the Packers 7-1 with Aaron Rodgers. Would you be surprised if they made it to the Super Bowl? In the South, Buccaneers just won the Super Bowl. No surprise there. You'd probably be a little more surprised with the Saints, especially now losing Jameis Winston, but they are 5-2. They have a really good defense. They have Sean Payton, who's won a Super Bowl before. Would you be over? Like, would you be shocked if the Saints won the NFC? And in the NFC West, the Cardinals and Rams both 7-1. And then, do you still count out the Niners? They haven't been good this year, but they were in the Super Bowl 2 years ago. Do you count out the Seahawks? If Russell Wilson comes back and gets healthy, maybe they get hot. Russell Wilson always overachieves. He's been to the Super Bowl a couple of times. My point being, for most of those teams I mentioned, is it realistic they make the Super Bowl? Probably not. But at the end of the day, would you be completely shocked if they did make it to the Super Bowl? Would you be shocked if the Seahawks, Russell Wilson comes back after the bye next week, Seattle gets hot, they make the playoffs, and they go on a run? Would you be that surprised? The Niners, the Rams, even the Saints, obviously teams like the Buccaneers, Cowboys, Packers. My point in all this being that for Kansas City, A, you can't count them out because the league's wide open, which takes me to point number B, that the league is wide open. I mean, there could be any of about 12 teams that make it to the Super Bowl this year, and I could say, oh, yeah, I see that. I get that. I understand. Now, if the Houston Texans, right, the Jacksonville Jaguars, a team like that, if they make it, of course, you'd be incredibly shocked. Nobody saw that coming at the start of the season. The Giants at this point, the Lions. But for most of these teams, half the league, you look at them and, oh, yeah, you know, I could see it. If they figure this out, if they get hot here, if this quarterback gets going, their schedule gets a little bit easier. The league is wide open this year, kind of like college football. College football, you have the one heavy favorite in Georgia. In the NFL, everybody tells me the Bills are a heavy favorite, but I don't buy it. I think both sports, you're still trying to figure out who can really challenge for that top spot. Last thing from last night's Monday Night Football game. If you're watching the Manning cast, you saw this. This is one of my pet peeves. All right, I give you my coaching book when it comes to football. We talk about certain rules here on the Morrow Midday Show, such as anytime it's fourth and short, just quarterback sneak it. Anytime it's fourth and short, put the quarterback under center. Stop running it out of the shotgun. Stop turning a half-yard run into a five-yard run. In short yardage situations, don't bring in the extra linemen and tight ends because that just allows the defense to stack the box. When you're going to run it in short yardage, still spread them out. Go with the spread look so that it's five on four in the box and you have a better chance of converting. And my other pet peeve, my other rule, if I was ever a coach in football, I see coaches screw this up every week, and it happened last night, and Peyton Manning was all over it. And it's coaches not using their timeout before the two-minute warning. It makes no sense to me. Joe Judge was guilty of it last night with the Giants in the fourth quarter. They had one timeout remaining, and he let the Chiefs just run the clock down to the two-minute warning to use his timeout after the two-minute warning. Here is Peyton Manning on the Manning cast last night as this was unfolding, puzzled and wondering, what are the Giants doing?
Hey, they only got one timeout left.
But just, I don't know why you got to just let 40 seconds just come off the clock.
Go right there.
Yeah, I call one, and there's a chance the Chiefs might throw it.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
Now it's incomplete, and then you got the two-minute warning. But it kind of changes the play calling for the Chiefs, I think, if you call a timeout.
They probably ran it.
Manning last night in the Manning cast. I never understand this idea. I see it every week in football. I want to use my timeouts as quickly as I can. You use the timeout at 2:30, make them run a play, and then you can get the two-minute warning. And as Peyton says, who knows? Maybe at that point they have to throw the football, stop the clock on their own. Why let it run down to the two-minute warning, use that stoppage there, and then your timeout afterwards? Even if it's only a five-second play, you just lost 5 seconds. By letting them run it down to the two-minute warning, use a play, and then call your timeout. Use your timeouts before the two-minute warning. I yell at the TV every week watching football when I see coaches do this, and I have no idea why nobody's in their ear telling them to use the timeout before the two-minute warning. The Giants sat there last night and let the Chiefs just run off 35 seconds because, we got the two-minute warning coming up. Use your timeout first. Make them run another play before the two-minute warning. Then they'll have to run a second play to get to the two-minute warning. Makes no sense. In the end last night, didn't make a big difference, but you could have given Daniel Jones about 35 extra seconds, 30, 35, 25 seconds more on that final possession. Poor clock management. I see it every week. And there are kids at home. Look, we're not smarter than these football coaches. You put me in a room with these football coaches, they will run circles around me with their X's and O's. But there are kids that play Madden each week that know better clock management than a lot of these coaches every week, and I don't understand it. Coming up, the college football playoff ranking is released tonight for the first time. What are the biggest questions that need to be answered, and how should the top 10 look? I'll let you know when we come back. It's the Morrow Midday Show, right here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
If I could be you and you could be me for just 1 hour, if we could find a way to get inside each other's mind. If you could see you.
Coming up, the biggest questions that need to be answered tonight by the College Football Playoff Committee, plus how the top 10 should look tonight. We'll get to that here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Open the show, talking about Monday Night Football last night and how wide open the NFL seems to be, similar to college football, at least outside of Georgia. And we'll get to that in just a moment. I came in this morning. This was left on my desk, I assume, by Bobby. I love this type of stuff, so I do appreciate it, even if it's at the detriment of the Vikings. Last year, Cowboys-Vikings played. Andy Dalton had a touchdown pass to Dalton Schultz. It was the only passing touchdown in NFL history where the passer's last name matched the receiver's first name. Dalton to Dalton. Andy Dalton to Dalton Schultz. That's interesting to me. And I did not know about that one. I did know about this one when it happened the other night. But then Sunday night, again, Cowboys-Vikings this year, playing for the second straight year, and we had the only passing touchdown in NFL history where the passer's first name matches the receiver's last name. Cooper Rush to Amari Cooper. I find that very interesting. And just the coincidence that it's the Cowboys and the Vikings back-to-back years. So you had Andy Dalton to Dalton Schultz, and then you had Cooper Rush to Amari Cooper. Surprised it's the first time it's ever happened before. What are common first name, last name type of deals? Right, like Cooper, I don't know how many kids, I don't know how popular Cooper is as a first name. Dalton as a first name, you have Andy Dalton to Dalton Schultz. You know, are there any kids first name like Jones? Plenty of Jones in the league. Anybody ever name their kid Smith as a first name? First time it's ever happened, though, and of course it's Cowboys against the Vikings back-to-back years. Found that interesting. And, of course, it happened to the Vikings. You know, any Vikings fan knows whenever you watch something and they show like, oh, first time this has happened since, it's always against Minnesota. Whenever somebody has a career day or they set a record, it's always against the Vikings. So it's no surprise that the Vikings are on the wrong end of this interesting stat. They have a thing in the NFL called scoregami. Anytime there's a score, a final score, a unique final score, the first time we've ever had that final score in NFL history, it's scoregami. This is name-a-gami, I guess. First time we had an Andy Dalton to a Dalton Schultz, last name to a first name, and then first name to last name, Cooper Rush to Amari Cooper. You know, I always talk about how important it is to have quarterbacks to win in football these days. And then I look out at this year in the NFL and college football. This past weekend in the NFL, not much made sense. You had Tom Brady lose to a third-string quarterback in Trevor Siemian. You had Cooper Rush in his first career start go on the road and beat Kirk Cousins. Although, let's not give Kirk too much credit here. You had, who is it, Mike Wilson with the Jets? Is that his name? Mike White, right? Mike White with the Jets beat Joe Burrow, and he played incredible. Backup quarterbacks. Geno Smith beat Trevor Lawrence. Granted, Trevor Lawrence is only a rookie, but the backup quarterbacks were 4-0 this week. Crazy. Usually, you know, you need that top quarterback. The bottom 16 teams in the NFL this year all have losing records outside of the Steelers. Bottom 16 teams in points scored all have losing records outside of the Steelers. You need to score points. You need offense. You need, therefore, a good quarterback. And yet, backup quarterbacks went 4-0. Maybe it means it's never been easier than now to play quarterback. And I look at the NFL and I look at college and I see some similarities in which both are pretty open. And also, even look at Georgia. Best team in the country, they're being led by Stetson Bennett right now, who is far from the best quarterback in the country. Michigan State is undefeated. We'll see where they slot them tonight. Their quarterback is not dynamic. They're being led by a running back. Right, Oklahoma had to make a quarterback switch. They're undefeated. Alabama's quarterback's been pretty good. Wake Forest's quarterback has been pretty good. Cincinnati's quarterback is highly regarded. He's been a little up and down this year. C.J. Stroud has been learning on the fly. Right, but some of the best teams in college football, it's not so much about the best quarterbacks like it typically is. On Twitter, after the opening segment, a tweet on the old Twitter machine said that, I think you are drastically overreacting to the win by New Orleans. They historically always take one from the Bucs, and there's absolutely no way they make the Super Bowl at Taysom Hill against Green Bay, Dallas, Rams, Cardinals, and Tampa Bay. Yeah, without Jameis Winston, if you're going to have to rely on Taysom Hill or Trevor Siemian, I guess that would be a pretty big shock if one of those quarterbacks got to the Super Bowl. We have seen it before, although it's been a while, but you go back to a Trent Dilfer or a Brad Johnson. The Saints this year, they don't have a legendary defense like that, but they are fourth in points allowed. They have the fourth best scoring defense in the league, and you have a good coach in Sean Payton where Jameis Winston wasn't anything special this year, but he was throwing a bunch of touchdowns. I mean, he wasn't great, but even for Jameis, not a ton of yards, not throwing it a lot, you know, but he had like a 3-1 touchdown interception ratio before getting injured. With that said, yes, the win against Tampa Bay should be taken with a little bit of a grain of salt because they seem to just have Tom Brady's number. It's something we talked about in the show yesterday and Friday when we were previewing this game. But Brady now, since joining the Bucs, is 0-3 in the regular season against the Saints and has 8 turnovers in those 3 games. Sunday was the first time in his career that he threw an interception in the final 2 minutes of a 1-possession game. First time in his career that he had the football with a chance to lead a game-winning drive in the final 2 minutes and actually threw a pick instead. Never happened before, which is crazy. And then it happened Sunday in New Orleans. Remember, the Saints gave the Bucs their worst loss last year, beat them by 35. There's just something about that matchup. And Brady got the last laugh last year, beating them in the playoffs. But there's apparently it's a regular season thing that the Saints are Tom Brady and Tampa Bay's kryptonite. But the Saints are 5-2, Super Bowl-winning head coach, top 5 defense. They don't ask too much from their quarterback. Would you be that surprised if they did make it first to the playoffs and then went on a little bit of a run? I guess because of that quarterback problem. But we just saw 4 backup quarterbacks win on Sunday. Who knows? Maybe this is the bizarro NFL season where you can win with inferior quarterbacks for once. Which takes me to college football tonight. We get the rankings tonight. And college football is similar to the NFL in that sense that, again, the top teams don't necessarily have the best quarterbacks this year. And also the idea that outside of Georgia, college football is really wide open, it seems. We believe Alabama's the second-best team, and then, I don't know, try to figure out how you'd order the rest of them. The biggest questions or teams to watch tonight, the biggest questions that need to be answered and the teams to watch tonight that could help answer those questions for the committee, 4 of them. Number 1, Cincinnati. Of course, Cincinnati's the biggest question. How much respect will the committee give to a Power 5, or I should say a Group of 5 school? Where will they slot Cincinnati? Will they be number 2 like they are in the polls, or will they drop them out of the top 4? Where do they put Cincinnati tonight? That is the big question. Number 2 on the questions that need to be answered tonight, and we will get these answers a little bit later this evening, the whole Oregon versus Ohio State debate. Are you going to put Oregon behind Ohio State like in the top 25? Because Oregon, as you recall, beat Ohio State, and head-to-head needs to count for something. They have the same record. They're both Power 5 teams. Maybe Ohio State's in a better conference. But Oregon beat them head-to-head. I don't want to hear anything else. That should be the most important differing element here, the most important asset to differentiate these two programs. They beat them. That's all I need to know. When they played, Oregon beat Ohio State. Therefore, they're the better team. They should be slotted ahead of them. Will the playoff committee do it? The third question and team to watch is Wake Forest. How much respect do we give to the ACC? Because, of course, you know, the thought was Clemson coming into this year. And Clemson's been down, and Wake Forest has been undefeated. And the ACC is not a great conference, similar to the Pac-12. But you got to give credit to a team that is undefeated in a Power 5 conference, ranked, you know, as high as Wake Forest is. Their quarterback's played really well this year. How much props do you give to an undefeated team out of the ACC that's not Clemson? This can happen a lot where somebody's in the shadow of somebody else. We focus so much on Clemson, and then when Clemson struggles, we just completely write off the ACC. Like, oh, yeah, but, you know, Clemson's not very good. And then Wake Forest is over there in the shadow. You know, they're jumping up and down over in the corner. What about us? What about us? And you don't pay attention to them because, well, they're just not Clemson. And without Clemson, you don't think much about the ACC. Just like, you know, growing up, one of your kids, you know, maybe the parent's favorite or the prized student gets a bad grade and the parents are all upset. And then the other siblings said, well, what about me? I got an A. I got an A in the test. What about me? But you don't think about them because they're not the premier student. You're worried about your other kid who gets all the good grades. And when they're struggling, right, you lose focus that, hey, at least another kid's doing well. When Clemson's struggling, you don't even think about Wake Forest. You just completely block the ACC out of your mind. Where do you slot Wake Forest tonight? How much respect will be given to an ACC team not named Clemson? And then the last question to be answered tonight is, will a conference be positioned to get 2 playoff teams this year? Because right now, you have undefeated teams in the SEC. At least, you know, you got 1 undefeated team in the SEC, the Big Ten, the Big 12, and then also the ACC, and then Cincinnati. So you have 5. with only four spots. But do you slot another team ahead of one of those? A second Big Ten team? A second SEC team? Where do you position Alabama? Are they a top four? Do you put Ohio State ahead of an Oklahoma and a Wake Forest? Therefore, positioning either the Big Ten or the SEC to potentially get two teams into the playoff field while leaving a conference potentially out. How do they position the second teams of these different conferences? Will the SEC or Big Ten be positioned to potentially make up half of the playoff field this year? Those are the things to look for in the first ranking tonight. Things can always change in the first ranking. We get all excited and worked up for this thing tonight when there's still weeks to go and things are going to change and teams are going to play one another. But it is interesting, you know, talking material and just to see the opening ranking, to see where the committee is at, to see how they power rank these teams at this point in the season. Heather Dinich was on ESPN SportsCenter, and she was breaking down how she would rank the top four of the playoff ranking this evening. Here was Heather Dinich.
It starts off with the most obvious choice and the most complete team in the country, which is obviously Georgia. They clinched a spot in the SEC championship game because they've already won the East Division. But when you look at what they've done, they've held each of their first eight opponents under 14 points and outscored them by a collective 250 points. I don't think we're going to be surprised by the selection committee's top team when the rankings come out on Tuesday. And then at number two, I still have Alabama there. Even though they have one loss, that loss to Texas A&M, since then, they have outscored their opponents 101 to 33. They are ranked in the top five in both offensive and defensive efficiency. That's a common trait of playoff contenders. I think they deserve to be there. And then at number three, welcome to the club, Michigan State. I don't know if the selection committee is going to follow my lead here, but I gave them the nod because of that win against Michigan. When you look at what Kenneth Walker III has done, he should be on everyone's Heisman list. Against Michigan, he ran for 8.6 yards per carry. And then at number four, I have undefeated Cincinnati. I know it hasn't been easy each of the past 2 weeks against Navy and Tulane, but back-to-back road wins, they're still undefeated. And yes, that win against Notre Dame on the road still counts.
Heather Dinich on ESPN SportsCenter giving how she expects the top four to play out tonight. Well, let's do one better. I do a Tuesday Top 10 every week on the show. We're going to bust out our Tuesday Top 10 earlier than normal today, and I'm going to tell you how I would rank the top 10 teams in the first college football playoff ranking here this evening. Let's grab our intro for our Tuesday Top 10. One sec.
Time
there we go. Technical issues.
Tuesday Top 10, where we rank anything from quarterbacks to cheeseburgers right here on the Morrow Midday Show. Interested?
You know, the rules around here, we can't do anything without an intro. Tuesday Top 10. Number one is clearly Georgia. Let's go 1 to 10 because there's no drama at the top. It's obviously Georgia. As Heather ran off the numbers, right, they've outscored teams by about 200 points this year. They have the most dominant defense that we've seen in a very long time in terms of the amount of points or lack thereof that they've actually surrendered this year. Georgia's obviously number one. They're in a class by themselves. Then the intrigue begins. I go Michigan State number two because I'm not going to follow through on what I'm about to say throughout this top 10, but at a certain point, wins need to count for something. Everybody has Alabama number two because Alabama probably passes the eye test as the second best team in the country. But what's the point of playing the games? I say this every year. Right, why don't we just jump right into the playoff and September then? You have to actually go out there and play the games. Alabama lost to an unranked team when they were a heavy favorite. Michigan State has not lost. Now, that may change, but right now Michigan State is 8-0. Half of those wins came against teams that currently have winning records. They now just beat a top 10 team, so they have their good win right on their slate, on their resume as well, beating Michigan in come-from-behind fashion. They're undefeated in the Big Ten. I got to go Michigan State number two. And then with that said, this is where I kind of talk out of both sides of my mouth. Wins have to count for something. But when I look at Oklahoma, Cincinnati, Wake Forest, I just can't put them. They have not been impressive enough to put them over Alabama. So that's where I draw the line. I put Alabama at number three. So I'm not much different than most people I see predicting this whole thing. But I just think when you want to compare Michigan State to Alabama, Michigan State should be above Alabama because they've looked good enough with their undefeated record. Alabama, I do put at number three, followed by Oklahoma, Cincinnati, Wake Forest. I then follow up with the three next undefeated teams because, again, wins need to count for something. The one exception I make is that I do slot Alabama in the top five. So to stay with me here, I have Georgia 1, Michigan State 2, Alabama 3, Oklahoma 4. And then Cincinnati 5, Wake Forest 6. The reason why I stack those three in that order is Oklahoma hasn't been overly impressive to me in the way they've played this year in some close games. But since switching to Caleb Williams, they've been much better and looking more, outside of the first half against Kansas, looking more like a Lincoln Riley Oklahoma. Whereas Cincinnati, who I then put next, it's no fault of Cincinnati or very little fault to Cincinnati. They've done most of what they could this year. They played their schedule. They beat everybody on their schedule. We always say their schedule's not good enough, so they scheduled two top 20 teams on the road this year, beat them both. The problem for me for Cincinnati, why I put them behind Oklahoma, is because in the last couple of weeks, Oklahoma has improved to Caleb Williams, where Cincinnati, their opponents are a combined 27 and 29, under 500, not great. The Big 12 is a little tougher than the AAC. That's why I put Oklahoma ahead of Cincinnati. But also, most notably, the last 2 weeks for Cincinnati were real struggles, where they only beat a one-win Navy team by 7. They were only up by 2 late in the third quarter against a one-win team this past weekend as well. Not good enough. I need some style points. So I put Cincinnati at number 5. I then put Wake Forest at number 6 because I do think Cincinnati, if they played on a neutral field, I do think Cincinnati is the better team than Wake Forest. And then to round out the top 10, because it is a top 10 list, I put Oregon at number 7, Ohio State number 8. Because as I said earlier, head-to-head should be the most important thing. If you have the same record and you're both Power 5 teams and you've beaten a couple of good, whatever you did against one another, you have the same record and this team beat this team, then yeah, they're better. So I put Oregon 7, Ohio State 8. And rounding out my top 10, I put Michigan 9, Notre Dame 10. Michigan is number 9 because they lost on the road to the number 8 team in the country at the time and the team that I would put number 2 in my playoff ranking. That's their one loss. So I think Michigan, of course, drops, but I still have them in my top 10. And the same reason for why I would put Notre Dame number 10. Because Notre Dame's one loss was against Cincinnati, who I have in my ranking at least as a top 5 team. And that's the only loss for Notre Dame. Have they looked great along the way? No, but again, you have to give credit for going out there and actually winning the games. And Notre Dame has won all of their games except against the team that in the top 25 poll is ranked number 2. If we're going to write off Alabama's loss to Texas A&M, then we need to give more respect to that loss for Notre Dame or even Michigan's loss to Michigan State. That's how I would put out my top 10 for the first playoff ranking this evening. Georgia, Michigan State, Alabama, Oklahoma as my top 4. Cincinnati is the next team in line, followed by Wake Forest, Oregon, Ohio State, Michigan, and Notre Dame. Therefore, my playoff right now, if the season ended, will be Georgia, Michigan State, Alabama, and Oklahoma. We'll see how the committee orders it tonight, and we'll react on the show tomorrow. Obviously, no Clemson on this list. That's the big team, the big missing team this year, the big disappointing team at the top of college football. But when we come back, is Clemson's down season actually good for their future? We'll get to that next. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Coming up, is Clemson's down season actually good for their future? It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. About 15 minutes from now, we'll catch up with Rex Walters, who played and coached in the NBA, coached Zion Williamson last year. Talk about what's going on with Zion and the latest developments early on in the NBA season. But we wait on the first college football playoff ranking to come out this evening. Obviously won't include Clemson for the first time here. You're not going to be looking to see where Clemson is, at least when we talk about the top 10 or the top 4. I mean, Clemson shouldn't be anywhere near the top 25 either. But for the first time here in a while, you're not worrying or wondering about Clemson in the rankings tonight. But could the down year for Clemson this year actually be a good thing for their future? I was reading this story about Arch Manning's visit to Clemson. He was there Saturday against Florida State. Maybe that's why Dabo said top five win, right? To get that come from behind victory, to win with Arch Manning there, and, you know, just have Will Shipley play well. Maybe that's why that was such a important big victory for him. We know all about Arch Manning. He's the number one quarterback in the class of 2023. He's labeled as this generational talent. He's going to be the next, the same things we heard about Trevor Lawrence, the next John Elway, the next Peyton Manning. He's going to be this great quarterback. But he's being recruited by all of the top programs. Now, this was his last visit to Clemson. This was his last visit of the season. He's now going to focus on his own playoff season for high school. Doesn't necessarily mean that it's a bad thing that it's the last stop. Now, in the eyes of the odds makers, Clemson is the long shot. When it comes to the odds, Clemson has the largest odds. Right now, according to those in Vegas, Texas is the favorite to land Arch Manning, followed by Georgia, Alabama, Ole Miss, LSU, and then Clemson. Those are the teams that it's believed to be coming down to. Those are the programs in which Arch Manning visited this football season. And Clemson was the last one. Now, he was at Clemson. You know, he was at their camp this summer, met Dabo before, obviously knows the staff. They've been recruiting him. Brandon Schroeder specifically has been very involved with the Manning family and Arch Manning's high school coach. And they all have good things to say about the program and the coaches and Schroeder and the recruiting efforts of Clemson. Doesn't necessarily mean it's a bad thing that they go last. Right? Now, you would think you want to go to your favorite spots first. You go to where you're most excited. I mean, we all do this, especially like for vacation or anything. You want to go wherever you're looking forward to go. You want to go there first. You usually don't go last. But when it comes to, say, making a purchase, and that's, you know, that's not the case here, but it's the same idea for the Manning family. If you were making a purchase and you already knew you were interested in something, yeah, maybe you just go out and buy it. If you're looking for a new car, maybe you know the car you like and you go there to the dealership and you just buy the car and there's not much of a search and you're good to go. But if you are a little open-minded, if you are searching, and that's what the recruiting process is, right? If you knew the one school, you wouldn't go through this whole process and visit other schools. You're open-minded. You need somebody to wow you. You're on the fence. You're in between a few. If you are looking around to go purchase a car and you have one in mind and you say, you know, I think I like that car. I'm not 100% sure. I'm not sold on it. Maybe there's something better out there, but that's at least the front runner. Then don't you go see that car last? Because you already know, like, yeah, you know, I think that's the front runner. I'm not sold. I do like that car. My buddy has that car. I like when I ride in it. It seems like a smooth ride, nice interior. It's a good-looking car. He enjoys it. I do like that car. You go see it last. And in the meantime, you go to other dealerships and look at other cars to see if any of them can wow you, if they can win you over. And when you look at those other cars, okay, yep, I see that. Oh, I see that one. Okay, now let me go see the car I was most interested in. And now you have that point of reference. You can compare all the other cars to this one that you're seeing last. It's okay, I went to BMW, and I looked at that Audi and this one, that one. And you know what? This one still is the front runner. I'm not saying that's the case for Arch Manning. In fact, everybody that's in on this conversation, again, believes Texas is the favorite, and Clemson may be the long shot of these programs. But my point being, some will probably look at that and it's like, oh, he went to Clemson last, right? You know, he went to Texas first. He went to Georgia next, right? Those are the schools he's most interested in. Yeah, maybe. When you're excited for something, you probably go there first. If you want to try a couple of new restaurants and one you want to try more than the other, you're probably trying that one first. But if you already have an idea in your mind and you're out buying, maybe it's a house. You're looking for a new home, and there's this one house that you've already seen before. You drove past it, or it's around the corner from you, and you think, oh, yeah, you know, I like that house. I think that could be the front runner, but I'm not sold. Let me see what else is out there. You go look at the other houses first, and then you come back to that one to see how it compares. And you walk into that house, and you say, oh, you know what? This is still the best one. We looked at all these other houses. They don't match up to this one. Maybe that would be the case with Clemson. Now, when it comes to a lot of the quotes and everything, right, it's all positive. I think Clemson's biggest strength is their culture and staff solidarity. I think that for him is one of the things where nothing will be done impulsively, is what Arch Manning's coach said about Clemson. He talked about the great relationship they have with Brandon Schroeder, how good of a guy he is, how often he's been in contact with the coach's family and the Manning family as well. But here's the other appeal potentially to Clemson, is that you never want to be the guy to replace the star. You want to replace the guy who tries to replace the star, right? Clemson's having a down year this year, and some may think that that would turn Arch Manning off, that they would turn him away. He was at that game Saturday against Florida State where, you know, it wasn't the prettiest game. And he'd be standing on the sideline thinking like, oh, this program, they're not very good. I don't want to go play for them. But maybe that's even more appealing because you watch DJ struggle. And even though Arch is still 2 years out, DJ may not even be the quarterback for Clemson next year. Maybe Kate Klubnik comes in and he's this fantastic quarterback. Things can change quickly. But when you look at these teams currently, because we can't predict the future, this is all we know. And you go and you visit Alabama, and they have Bryce Young, you know, who's not going anywhere just yet. And even Georgia, I know he's not playing, but you have JT Daniels for the next 2 years. Maybe. I mean, they're the number one team in the country already. They're fine with Stetson Bennett. You go look at some of these other teams. Texas, apparently the front runner. I mean, their quarterback still has more years of eligibility. He can be back. My point being, when you look at these teams and you look at Clemson, yes, they're struggling, but you could see that as an opportunity. You know, like, wait a minute. Right? They need a quarterback. DJ is not what they thought he was going to be. I could come in here. I'll win this job right away and come play with these other talented. I'll be the one to fix them. You never want to be the guy to replace the star. You don't want to replace Trevor Lawrence, but you want to replace the guy who struggled after Trevor Lawrence because then the expectations are a little bit lower. Then they want you even more. They need you. Whereas in Alabama, right, they're humming along with Bryce Young. And Georgia's humming along with anybody they throw back there. And even Ole Miss, Matt Corral, he's not going to be there, but he's the Heisman candidate right now at Ole Miss. And then we'll see who they get to replace him. And then you look at Clemson, and they're like the most quarterback needy program right now. And you think, I could be the solution. Because we all want to be the solution. We all want to be wanted. We want to be the one that goes in and fixes something. Sure, you could join a company that, you know, they're highly, a well-oiled machine, highly operating. You're just on the bottom of the totem pole. Or you could go be a star somewhere. But you never want to be the one to replace the star. You want to replace the guy who replaced the star. Urban Meyer did it at both Florida and then Ohio State. Had great success. Right? Even like Notre Dame. After Lou Holtz, there was a bunch of bad coaches. Then here comes Brian Kelly. Makes you look even better. You never want to be the guy right afterwards. You want to give it a little bit of a buffer zone. Saban didn't come in after Bear Bryant. There were some scrubs first. Right? He replaced a lousy coach there and turned around Alabama. It could almost be more appealing if you're Arch Manning. Could be seen as a little bit of a challenge, as an opportunity. I'm going to be the one that get Clemson back where they were. Instead of Alabama, shuffle in any quarterback, they're fine. Last three quarterbacks went in the first round. This current quarterback, Bryce Young, is going to have him in the top three. He's playing just fine. Georgia, doesn't even matter who the quarterback is. They're the number one team in the country anyways. It's not about the quarterback. Right, Ole Miss, Matt Corral. That's Matt Corral's team right now. And even though he won't be there in 2 years, you still kind of have to fill in those shoes. The expectations set by the quarterback of, you know, Heisman play. Maybe Clemson is the spot for a young high school quarterback looking for a place to go. You don't have to replace the star. You can replace the struggling guy trying to replace the star. Makes it a little bit easier. Coming up, we'll talk a little NBA with Rex Walters, who joins us or will join us when we come back. Former coach and player in the NBA who coached Zion Williamson last year. What is going on with Zion right now? Can't get on the floor. Looks to be a little too big. We'll get to everything going on in the NBA early in the season when we come back with Rex. More on Midday Show on ESPN Radio.